Did you watch the vice presidential debate last night? What did you think? 203-333-9422. We are talking about it all morning long, and we wanted to get some perspective from one of our political professors who I really love talking to. From Quinnipiac University, Scott McLean is back. He is a faculty director for the University Honors Program at Quinnipiac, also the president of New England Political Science Association, also happens to be a professor of political science. What'd you think about last night, Scott?
It was a little unexpected. Traditionally, I kind of expected a political science sort of expectation of a couple of attack dogs. They were surprisingly cordial. I think someone in both campaigns said that the swing voters that you're reaching out for really want to hear more of a policy debate, and for you not to attack each other about, who's the biggest liar. So I thought it was an interesting debate. Clearly, to me, J.D. Vance is a better debater. He's smoother. But that might not necessarily help with the voters that they're trying to reach. They may not like a kind of smooth debater style, but instead of more sort of down home, regular guy like Walt, I guess we'll find out. The early indications are that Walt still came off as more likable than Vance with voters, but that may be just based on partisanship, and so that data will take a while to sort through, maybe a week or two.
So Scott McLean is here again with Quinnipiac University, and overall, you were saying it was very different. I kind of felt the same way. So I'm watching this debate last night, and right out of the gate, it didn't feel like a forced handshake. It didn't feel like two men who couldn't have mutual respect for each other while they didn't agree on everything. I felt that there were even moments where they even would say, yeah, I'm okay with that, or yeah, I agree with that, or I respectfully disagree. It brought decorum back to what debates used to be. Yeah. And it sounds like you agree with that. The other thing that I saw, too, Scott, that I thought was interesting was I thought the moderators were a lot better. I thought that they stayed very mutual, like they were down the middle. I didn't feel that they were leaning towards one over another candidate. But I also felt like their questions actually had substance to them, like right out of the gate, talking about what was in the news right now and not talking about those sexy hot button topics that I feel like we kind of go over and over so many times. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, it was very dense policy questions. And one interesting thing, if people were watching it on C-SPAN the way I was, C-SPAN would put the question underneath at the bottom of the screen. So you could remember what the actual question was. And one effect of that is many, many times in that debate, I said to myself, they're not even trying to answer the question that was asked. Before I answer that question, let me attack your top of your ticket sort of response, and then not leaving a whole lot of time, if any, to actually answer the question. Mm. I thought the candidates were not completely ready for such a dense policy discussion, though they should have been, because I think that was actually their strategy going in. But it's clear to me that Waltz was kind of nervous and kind of off of his rhythm. He did get it back, and I think he finished, with this discussion of January 6th and Vance's unwillingness to say that Trump won, lost the election in 2020. I thought that was the biggest contrast, and it was. I think it was really effective for Waltz and not so effective for Vance, who seemed to be trying to evade giving a straight answer on that. Overall, I had to check my calendar, Melissa. It's like, are we actually in 2024? This seems like a debate from the 80s or something, where they actually have a discussion and a give and take.
Yeah. Scott McLean is here from Quinnipiac University. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. I was surprised that this morning, I'm, you know, as a news reporter, I'm usually inundated with all the fact check reports. There weren't a lot of fact checks. There weren't a lot of instances where, oh, they were both so off. I mean, it was actually really great. I think J.D. Vance had a moment where there was, you know, stuff with the border. He had well overestimated the amount of illegal activity happening. I think he had said there's 20 to 25 million immigrants that have illegally crossed the border. And I think the last report showed it's actually 10 million, which is well below what he was saying. It's still a record high, but not the number he was saying. And I believe Tim Walz was called out for you know, travel that he had mentioned. You know, he was in one place when, in fact, he really wasn't. But that was really it. I didn't feel like there was a lot of fact-checking issues going on, which that, too, was kind of new, I have to say, for the American people waking up the next morning going, oh, well, at least there weren't, like, a bunch of lies on both sides. That was really nice.
Yeah, I think Walz was really surprised by that question about, you know, where were you during Tiananmen Square? The answer he gave was just so strange. Mm. And a long sort of dog ate my homework sort of explanation.
Right.
I mean, he should have just said, I misspoke. I made a bonehead move. I shouldn't have said that. You know, and then he could have flipped the script and said, like, that's nothing compared to, you know, what you're hearing from the other side or something. You know, anything other than what he said would have been a good answer.
Right.
I think, which didn't seem to actually, at least maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention at that moment to say, was there an answer in there about what he was actually doing on that day or what?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there was some good moments and bad moments. I still think that somebody in these campaigns decided that the best strategy was for them to try to be nice guys to each other, because that's what undecided swing voters in those swing states are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, let's be real, Melissa. I mean, the vice presidential debate is a poor substitute for what everyone really wants, which is another Trump-Harris debate, which I think we'll probably never really get.
So Scott McLean,
really unlikely.
Scott McLean is with us, and he is a political professor at Quinnipiac University. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. Right before the break, Scott, you had said everyone really just wants to see another presidential debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. But, you know, after watching last night, Scott, first of all, so you feel like last night's debate really isn't going to do anything. It's not going to move the needle, you're saying, for voters. They really want to see those two match up.
There's not much needle to move. I mean, we're really talking about a tiny sliver of voters in some swing states that still are thinking about who they'll vote for. And both of these campaigns are spending millions of dollars trying to figure out how to get those voters off the fence. And I'm not sure this debate did it, but historically, you know, we just don't see much evidence that a vice presidential debate really changes in any measurable way, you know, really who's going to win or who's going to get an edge, who's going to get a bump. I mean, there have been so many other big events in this campaign that really haven't changed the fundamental nature of this race, which is it's about 48% to 48% on both sides with some people who are still undecided. And, you know, there weren't any big zingers, you know, if you're old enough to remember, you know, that famous 1988 presidential debate between Dan Quayle, and suddenly I'm spacing on, now I'm showing my age, right? But the famous line, like, you're no, Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy. I can remember the line.
Mm.
I can barely remember the candidates, but these sort of moments that stick in people's minds. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that we had any big headline blasting moments or.
But maybe that is the headline, Scott. I mean, you know what's interesting, Scott? You know what I'm overwhelmingly hearing after last night's debate? Man, I wish the ticket was flipped. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing, I wish we had two fresh faces who we really don't see in front of the media that much who were actually running for president. I'm hearing people who are saying, yeah, I know who I'm voting for this year. Maybe this didn't sway the way I was going to vote. But man, it did show me that we really, on both sides of the aisle, we really rested on tired people. And we should have gone with new people and taken a risk and taken two new people as our candidates for the Republican and Democratic Party. That could be the headline. Yeah. The fact is that maybe wasn't a sexy debate and anything that stands out, but it was certainly new perspective, new faces. I agree that Tim Walz clearly didn't seem very comfortable. J.D. Vance maybe a little bit more, and that could be because of age. It could be because he prepared for, who knows? But regardless of it, these are two guys that really, until they were both called as the VP nominees of their parties, you really didn't hear about them before. And I think people were just surprised to hear who they really are, and actually felt like, man, I'm a little depressed going to the polls in November, because it would be nice to have had two different people than what our current options are.
Yes, only in 2024 will people like you and me say, bring back boring politics.
Right? But it's true. It's true, Scott. I mean, I have to be honest. Like, again, all around on this, I was so happy to see that we had moderators who actually were not going to sway one way or the other. It was so nice to just have people stay on task and not have questions that were going to either, you know, sway one way or the other. I thought they talked about stuff that was current in the news. I mean, right out of the gate, second question in, we've got Hurricane Helene. How do you respond? I mean, I felt like it was actual moderating. And then you've got two candidates who clearly feel the way that they feel, but they were respectful. They brought decorum back. They to me, they were exemplary of what these debates were supposed to be, which were informative, and that the media couldn't, and social media couldn't, take, you know, one soundbite here or one soundbite here and really manipulate coverage to people in America. It felt normal. Yeah. You're right. It was boring. But man, I'll take boredom all day long in today's climate.
Amen.
Right.
I would love, like I said, I had to check my calendar to see what year I was in, what's going on here. But it's nice to know that it is possible to not have the kind of vitriolic attack politics that we've had. It is possible. It's not inevitable. But I really think too that these are the part of the reason that they are on these tickets is because they are like that. That they are bringing this sort of a Midwestern down home sort of approach. And again, I think Vance probably more than Walz had a lot to prove there. I mean,
I thought so too.
He's only 40 years old.
Right.
He's only
I have to say,
like
the media has made him out to be this extremist, crazy man who I actually think, if you are a Republican, has made people kind of uneasy. I thought we saw a totally different side to him last night. I thought you saw, you know, why Donald Trump would have picked him as a running mate. I felt he did prove that last night.
Yeah, I mean, he is a better representative of Trump than Trump is many times. I think in some ways that might be a problem in that you can say a lot of things about Donald Trump, but one thing I know for sure is that he loves the spotlight. And when the spotlight goes to someone else,
he doesn't like that.
People are
look at what happened to Ron DeSantis.
Vance did better.
Right.
When J.D. Vance is seen by people like you or me to have done way better in the debate than Trump did. Trump won't like that.
Trump doesn't like that. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point, Scott. I was going to say, Scott, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I always appreciate having you here. I am definitely going to be calling you back as we get closer and closer to the election. So you'll be hearing from me, my friend. Thank you so much. Scott McLean, again, with Quinnipiac University here on WICC. We're coming off of the vice presidential debate last night. And, of course, we are getting closer and closer to the presidential election in November. And we thought, let's get familiar with Quinnipiac University. University poll. It regularly will survey residents in many states and nationwide about some major political races, state and national elections, and issues that matter to people like you. And so joining us now for the first time, and I hope he has a good experience and will come back again, Tim Malloy, who is a Quinnipiac polling analyst. Tim, what did you think for right out of the gate? What did you think about last night's debate?
First of all, good morning, Melissa. Listen, we don't really do opinion. That's something we haven't polled yet because this has just happened. But I will offer this. I think it was two dramatically different candidates, dramatically different deliveries. Probably a lot of people are saying that Vance won the first half and his opponent came back and did very well at the end. That's as far as, and I would tend to agree with that. It was it took a little while for everybody to warm up. It was lively. It was polite, which was refreshing. And does it tip the scale one way or the other? I don't know. I don't think so. But we got a good look at both guys, which I think is healthy and good.
So let's talk about the Quinnipiac polling and what we're seeing so far leading up to the presidential election. Is it still considered to be pretty neck and neck of a race?
It is really a tie. I mean, you know, you understand margin of error. I know you do. You know, 2 points either way, it gives you a little cushion. And they're always within 2 or 3 points of each other. Right now, we just did a swing state poll with Georgia and North Carolina, two really key states. And we found Trump ahead in Georgia by 6 points, no surprise. North Carolina, tie. And that's a huge state and a state that could push one or the other over the edge. So, yeah, it's a little tedious and boring, but every time we do this, it's coming. It's so close that it's impossible to determine where we're really going to be 30 days from now or whatever many days it is.
Tim, do you mind answering how these polling institutes, how does this work? Like, how do you come up with who you're polling, who you're talking to, how frequently you're polling?
Sure,
I mean, give
us
a little. Yeah, I'd love to understand this better.
If you went to the Quinnipiac campus, there's a polling center where we will put 150 callers into a big area, and a computer calls cell phones and home phones all over America. We don't know who we're calling. If you get a call, that's random choice. What has happened before that is my colleague, my boss, Doug Schwartz, my colleague, Barry Snow, we have written 20 or 30 questions for each of these polls, carefully worded, giving, you know, not leaning one way or the other as much as we can. And those callers are people that we hire to make the calls, read off a script. The answers come in, it goes back into a computer and basically comes out with percentages. So it's about as clean as you can do it. We try to hit it down the middle as much as we can. We're nonpartisan, we're owned by a university, and we all are journalists in our background, so a lot, you know, we know you want to hit it down the middle. You try to be fair. That's sort of the overview, but it's a very big process. It's like 4 days and thousands of calls picked randomly by a computer.
And how often, Tim, would you say you're doing these polls, especially in a presidential election year?
We're doing one every week.
Wow.
We're either doing a national poll, meaning we call everywhere, or we call swing states, mainly the key ones like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Ohio, and others. You know, there's about 7 or 8 states that are probably going to determine this because they have big electoral college votes. And so, you know where New York's going to go and California goes, probably going to go Democrat. You know, the South is largely going to go Republican. But then there's these key states with all these electoral votes. So the ones, that's where you're seeing the candidates campaign right now. And so that's the ones, those are the ones we hit in the final days.
So it's really to kind of determine if anything is, like, if anything is working to kind of move the needle anywhere, especially with swing states.
You do, and you watch trends. In other words, we did Georgia 2 weeks ago. Well, we just did it yesterday, and it actually moved a little bit for Trump. So that tells you something might be going on. Again, you know, there's the whole, it's a snapshot in time. It's a one-day thing. It's what people are saying that day you call them. It can change in a way, and it does change. You know, I mean, look, many weeks ago, Kamala Harris was a 39% approval rating as a vice president people didn't know much about. Right now, there's a possibility she could become president. That's how quickly she caught fire. So these things can change on a dime or a slip or a gaffe or, you know, or an assassination attempt. I'm not taking that lightly. I mean, there was a little bit of a boost for Trump after that happened. So everything affects it.
Well, and that's why, I mean, it makes sense why you would do these polls on a weekly basis. Again, Quinnipiac polling analyst Tim Malloy is joining us. And Tim, I would love to have you on a more regular basis. I think this is super fascinating. And you see these polling results come through. I mean, I know WICC, we're on your emailing list. So we see the polls coming through and the results and all of that. It's just really, really interesting. Now, you had mentioned before, obviously, we're not even within the 24 hours after the vice presidential debate. So it's hard to really pinpoint and see what the opinions are. It's going to probably take days before you have those results. But right now, our understanding on a national level is, again, the nation's kind of split 50-51% who came out the victor of last night. I never really care about that. My bigger thing is sort of, does this move the needle whatsoever? I mean, again, when you look at what happened last night compared to just the presidential debate that happened weeks ago, I think the big headline this morning is the fact that there was civility, there was respect, there was decorum brought back. And what's interesting is there are a lot of, at least what I'm hearing from unaffiliated voters, saying, man, I wish the ticket was flipped and that we had the VPs running as president and vice versa. Now, of course, that's not going to happen, but I find that to be a really interesting headline this morning. And I'm not sure if that would ever come out in the polls. But what would you like to see after the vice presidential debate last night? You know, would you love to see, I guess, in the polling this week for Quinnipiac?
Well, just to add on to what you just said, which is very smart. Yeah, I actually have heard that from people, but, you know, they are a heartbeat away from the presidency, depending on which candidate went. So it is important. It is consequential who they are, what they think, how they sound. So, yeah. What do I hope to see or what I believe I'll see? We'll go right back on the horse. I don't think we're even going to poll the vice presidential debate because we take 4 days. So we're going to go back into the national poll meeting. We will make thousands and thousands of calls all over America. And in about 4 days, you'll get an email from us, and you and I can talk again on the radio. And here it is. Here's the trend. We can say, look, this is where we were a week ago with you, and here we are now. So it just grinds on. It's a process, you know. It's numbers and questions, and it's really the voice of America you're hearing through the polls. And we try to do it as accurately as we can.
Well, it's interesting, Tim, because, you know, one of the issues I would say that specifically the Trump administration, the Trump campaign has really faced is his age. And what's interesting is when you watch last night's vice presidential debate, we've actually had WICC listeners just this morning call in and say, I felt more confident knowing who the VP would be in that situation, whether it's an assassination attempt, which unfortunately we have seen, or it's a matter of, you know, like what we're seeing. I mean, granted, President Biden is going to finish out his term, but that was something that people were really looking at, which was, you know, does he have a VP who could step in if he does have health complications or something does happen? And J.D. Vance got a lot of support last night as, okay, this guy is able to step in if, God forbid, something does happen with the former president, if he is elected in. And that'll be interesting, I think, to see in the polls if, again, swing states especially, or if you see more unaffiliated voters going, actually, I have a more definitive idea of who I'm going to vote for in November. That will be interesting to me. I don't know.
It is. And I said at the top of this, these are two very different guys. You got a 40-year-old guy who went to Yale Law School. You got a two-time Minnesota governor who served in the military. They both served in the military.
Right.
Different parts of the country, different educations, different backgrounds. But again, like you said, it was courtly almost. You kept thinking it was going to reach a threshold and they kind of lash at each other. It wasn't until the very end when Walz went after Vance for, you know, will you finally admit the president lost the race, and he wouldn't do it, did it get a little tense. It was a great offering of two different coasts, two different kinds of candidates. And thank goodness, I think all of us are saying it was watchable because it was, I'm not going to say friendly, but it was gentlemanly.
Yeah, it was almost boring, which is like, which is great. I mean, I hate to say
yeah,
it that way, Tim, but
I mean,
I find that to also be a huge headline, that it's like all of a sudden boring is sexy to the American people. And the reason that I say that is because we've lived in such chaos for so many years, it feels like. And I think people would like to just go back to politics being the way that it used to be, you know, certainly relative, important in our daily lives, but just a little less chaotic, a little less taking over our news every single day for things that the average American really doesn't care about.
I must have shut the TV off and gone right to bed because my bedtime is usually 7 o'clock at night and I stayed up to watch the vice presidential debate. But I just noticed at the very end that both vice presidential candidates, their wives joined afterwards. They all shook hands. They almost had like this really beautiful moment where the four of them are like giggling and talking to each other. And I don't know. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone or something. I don't know. We're talking about the vice presidential debate last night. And some of the biggest headlines coming out of the debate was not so much about the sparks and entertainment and wild moments, but really the civility, the fact that there was mutual respect. There were even moments where they agreed to disagree or they respectfully agreed or disagreed with one another. It's interesting, but will it make a real difference? Tim Malloy is here, who is a Quinnipiac poll analyst on the show. Tim, during that quick commercial break, I looked at every major news network and not one person can tell me how many people tuned in last night. But what's amazing is you've got like the CNN pollsters, you've got the CBS pollsters, all the pollsters out there. They all basically say the same thing, that there's like about a 1% difference of who did better, who won. I mean, J.D. Vance, one says that it's 51% to 50% against his opponent. Yeah. Another is 41 to 40%. So they're about neck and neck. I mean, it's like a 50-50, essentially, no matter who polled. But I do find that really interesting, that the big takeaway is I don't know how many people tuned in, which would also be kind of interesting to find out. But if this really did make a difference, I don't know. I wonder. I wonder if it will. I don't know.
You know, I'll tell you, maybe not, because sort of there's your country, 50-50, 49-50,
right.
You know, so that kind of would sounds exactly like the polling on popularity, all the other issues on these guys and women. So maybe not. Maybe not. I think they both came off like they could probably pull the job off and reliable and nice guys. They have bet at each other's throats from a distance on, you know, everything from Walz's military record to the eating cats and dogs thing.
Right.
Which never came up.
I was surprised that never came up, Tim. I was sure that that was going to come up, but it didn't. I was surprised by that.
It was intentionally. I'm sure that Walz, I think, is probably a plus to not do that.
Yes.
Why, you know, we've heard this for weeks. Yeah, it is whatever it is. But neither one of them got I don't know what the word would be, combative.
I felt like it didn't get personal. Not, I don't want to say personal, but I think that's what, you know, it was interesting. We had one of our WICC listeners earlier this morning say it was the first debate in a long time that I could watch it and my children were not triggered by it, or I had to worry about if they were watching it in the background. Which as a young mom myself, I have a 6-year-old. I mean, thank God these debates happen later at night, because that's just it. I mean, it's a very hard, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. What we've been seeing, I think, honestly, ever since Donald Trump ran against Hillary Clinton, is it's just combative and it's just attacking each other and it's character assassination and it's also the media being very manipulative too. And so I felt like last night was sort of, like I said, I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. I don't think I've seen anything like that.
It has spilled over, and this is even a polling thing we've done. It's spilled over into our personal lives. Mm. Friends you used to have, you don't have.
Yes.
Family dinners aren't quite as comfortable as they usually are. No, it has trickled down right to the dinner table.
Mm. It's fascinating. Tim Malloy, I hope you had a pretty good experience, because I would love to have you back.
Yeah, anytime.
Okay, good. I'm going to hold you to that. Okay, good. I'm going to hold you to that and keep the polls coming. I just think it's really fascinating. And thanks for explaining how the whole process works. And you definitely will be coming back on well before the election starts in November. So thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
I'm always available. Good job, by the way. Thanks.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that so much. Quinnipiac polling analyst Tim Malloy. And again, for full results and seeing the trends and what Quinnipiac is doing, you could go to their website, poll.qu.edu. And we will have that on our website, voiceofct.com.